Welcome back to Campbell Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today is episode 249 of the podcast. And as is tradition, it is a solo Q&A with me answering questions sent in by you, the listeners, over on Instagram and across on my email list. This time around, these include my thoughts on mentorship, being present when in company, three things to consider when starting a business, what I'd do differently if I was 16 again, living like Alex Hormozi or Chris Williamson, and much more. We are within touching distance of 250 episodes, and I've just booked the studio to record that episode. So it's going to be a special solo episode where I sit down and I record and reflect on the biggest lessons I've learned across the last 250 episodes from all the different interesting guests that I've had. I've actually feel over prepared for this episode, and I've written down so many, so we'll get through as many as I can, and I'll distill down those lessons into one place. So make sure you're subscribed. It's going to be studio quality, myself sitting there going through the lessons. So if you haven't already, navigate your finger or your thumb across to YouTube and make sure you're subscribed on there, because the video quality from this one should be excellent. I'm sure that most of you listening to a solo episode are already subscribed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening to this one right now. But if you aren't, please make sure you are. And if there's one thing you can do to celebrate me hitting 250 episodes next week, it's to take the time to share your favorite episode from the archive with a friend, a group chat, a colleague, a family member, and get them involved in the Cambro listenership. I am so proud of what we've built here in terms of the community and the standard of content that we're able to bring to you on a weekly basis. Thank you so much for your support. The music's going to play, and it's time for another solo Q&A. It's that time again. It is a solo Q&A, episode 249 of the podcast. And let's just jump straight into the questions. Question number one, how valuable are relationships in sales and how do you maintain yours? For me, it's a pretty easy thing to understand that relationships are vital in so many things that we do. And if you're wanting somebody to buy from you, you need them to trust you above anything else, because I think a lot of people would assume that salespeople need to become friends with the prospect. They need to become friends with the client. Whereas I'd much rather be someone that they trust and they value over someone that they like and necessarily just enjoy chatting to. For me, it's going to be a value exchange. And the relationship is about understanding my client's needs, providing them with value, creating trust in my ability to deliver that value, and all the things that I promise them in the interaction, me coming through with those. And in terms of maintaining those relationships, I have a good memory of both personal and business details about clients. You'll have noticed from how I conduct myself in the podcast, I have quite good recall. I do have notes on some clients to support me, but on a personal perspective, I will try to remember things like their hobbies, what football team they support, what their family and their kids' situation is, any holidays they've been on, maybe when we've been speaking before, maybe they've been going off on leave. Business-wise, I remember and I note down what they've bought from me previously or what I've quoted for and not won, feedback they gave me about what they liked about the service, any challenges or issues that came up and addressing them head on, key dates which were important to them, to their orders, their requirements. I really do try and have a depth of knowledge and data about them, and looking back at what I knew about them previously is so important, and it really increases the level of trust that they have in me because I come across as credible. Question number two, will you ever switch up your podcasting schedule? If not, why not? If why, what is the reason? Every Sunday is my commitment that I've made to the audience, and I've not missed it once since starting in April 2020. And so to do so now would genuinely be me like going without brushing my teeth. It would feel wrong. I see a lot of podcast hosts, particularly ones that are in their early days, wondering why they're not getting the results that they want and expect. And if you've lacked consistency, you're going to be relying purely on talent and even luck to some extent. And I don't want either talent or luck to be one of my limiting factors. So I know from the data that my plays are highest on both a Sunday on release day and then a Monday when people are listening to the new podcast, whether on their way to the work or they're at their desk working on a task or if they're in their training or wherever they're listening. So the new episode that I release is part of their Sunday or their Monday routine. Everyone will have different times throughout the week when they, or different activities to do when they typically listen to a podcast. But if I've missed my upload on a weekly basis, you quite quickly will filter out of that routine and you'll be replaced by somebody who does show up for them and provides that reassuring episode that they look for on a weekly basis. I did add in a Wednesday episode when I've got a strong enough bank of episodes recorded. And that would be the only switch that I'd be looking to make in the longer term. If I had more time to produce podcasts, then I'd likely be twice a week, every single week. It's actually been the case for most of 2024. So that's been really pleasing, but it's not always possible. In the last few weeks, I've been back to one, back to Sunday. Number three, when was the last time someone told you they're proud of you? What was it and how did it make you feel? Funnily enough, I got a lot of messages and had a number of conversations after I shared that I'd received an award in work for hitting over £1.1 million in sales between April 23 and April 24. And the word proud came up twice. And the person that it came from that stood out the most was my mum. And it's not a term that you hear often, because I don't think your friends are likely to say they're proud of you. Maybe they will, but a lot of the time they're going to be pleased for you or buzzing for you or excited for you. But mum messaged me when I was in London last week, and after I'd sent her a photo of the award, and she said, I'm proud of you and making a success of the work that you've done. And both mum and dad had their concerns about me moving from the established sector of insurance at a huge broker like Marsh to the slightly less professionally respected world of furniture. But it's paid off massively over the last 3 years in so many ways. And I can genuinely be proud of my work and my efforts and, of course, the results that come from it. Many of you know that I'm process-driven and I will just keep ticking the boxes relentlessly. But you also need to see results to show that the fruits of your labor are worthwhile and that the box ticking has paid off. So overall, it felt really good for my mom to be proud of me. And I think all children intrinsically want to make their parents proud with what they do and who they are. Number four, best lesson in the last run of podcasts. I think David Robson's insights on the expectation effect were huge. It's been one of my favorite books that I've read over the last 18 months. So to host him on the show was amazing. And what he was explaining is there's a really negative impact from the nocebo effect, which is the opposite of the placebo. And that can really hinder our results before we've even started. So the way that our mind impacts our health, our athletic performance, our sleep, our mental well-being, our life expectancy, and even how your body interacts with food, medicine, and supplements is significant. So it's not a case of just switching to blue sky positive thinking or blamed optimism or manifesting from your bed to get the results that you haven't worked for. But it is more profound and empowering to be able to use your mind and your control over your own psychology to self-distance from external forces and to use your locus of control to be stronger and more powerful to enable you to succeed. I've actually, and if you're listening on audio, you've heard this in the introduction, I've got a special coming for you next week where for episode 250, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to distill down the biggest lessons from the last 250 episodes. So questions like this one, I'm going to be, for the first time, sitting down and sharing as many of those as I can within the time that I've got the studio for and just collect those insights in the one place. So hopefully you're all excited for that. Question number five, you get a lot of inbound guest requests now. How do you decide which ones are right? We definitely do get a lot now. I actually think it's quite funny. I got loads at the start, not very many in the middle. And now that the show is clearly successful, I get a lot more because people realize they might get exposure when they come on. What do I look for? I have a pretty strict criteria. The three things in general I look for: expertise and knowledge of their subject, previous interviews that they've done, so links to podcasts that they've been on or YouTube videos that they've produced, and lastly, a proven ability to communicate over video and audio. That for me is fundamental to a podcast. You could have somebody that's had amazing success in business or amazing success in some sort of incredible feat from a physical perspective, but if they're not able to communicate that really well, it's not going to be a very good podcast. So I definitely optimize for that. Bonus aspect, and the best people that have reached out to me and ended up coming on as a guest, they personalize the message on how they could bring value to the type of audience that I have and the type of show that I produce. And equally, quite often, if they've been a listener to the show and they've maybe tuned in a couple of times, the fact that they understand how the show operates is a massive added bonus, and that has resulted in more people who reach out coming on when they have an understanding of who they might be speaking to in terms of myself, but most importantly, the type of audience that it's going to serve. Question number six, spend a week with one of the following their routine and schedule and why: Alex Hormozi, Chris Williamson, or Joe Rogan? I think for me, it's going to be Chris Williamson, because I think he's the lives the lifestyle that I think would be the most enjoyable for where my goals and mindset is at right now. I think Hermosi is like this absolutely relentless businessman. I think I have a few of those qualities, but I'm definitely not in the same stratosphere from that perspective, and I haven't ever professed to be. Rogan, I think the comedy side of things doesn't interest me massively in terms of something I would want to do. The commentary side of things doesn't interest me massively. The podcasting side obviously does. I think Chris is probably living more like I would live. He is into his training. He's out in Austin in a great climate. He's having interesting conversations both on and offline. I think that would probably be closer to my cup of tea. Question 7. Hamza Yousef resigned, good or bad? I'm going to try and answer this without smiling too much because I think it's very good. He is a deeply divisive figure who not only was triggering to many people within Scotland from an aggressive standpoint and seemed to revel in it, but he was also incompetent in absolutely every government role that he'd worked in prior to becoming First Minister. So the fact that he held office of any stature, let alone the First Minister position, was laughable and a real dark point for our political system. I don't rate many politicians. I think the modern class of politician is largely people who are chasing power but couldn't achieve it in other areas that are slightly more what I would call meritocratic. But for me, Hamza was among the worst of the worst, and Scotland is definitely going to be better without him, albeit I'm not a big John Swinney fan by any means. I'm not an SNP fan by any means, so any of their leaders would not be favourable for what I'm looking for. But I certainly think that it is a slightly less aggressive, less hostile individual than Hamza. And I think people are now seeing the true face of nationalism and the SNP in particular, because I think there was a long-term PR campaign to paint nationalism in Scotland as different. And I think many people that listen to this who have maybe sympathised with that cause will have tried to view it through that lens. But nationalism, if you look throughout history, is a truly toxic ideology. And while it can be presented with a flowery exterior, it is very much a wolf in sheep's clothing. And I hope we now pull together more as a nation and start to address some of the big issues that we actually face. Because Scotland and the UK is not without its problems to seek, and obsessing over an independence cause that would be considerably more damaging than the Brexit referendum was, and we see the aftermath of that still. Goodness me, I think there's much more important things for us to focus on. Question number 8, if you got given £10 million, what would be the first things you would do? Right, first things first, I'm going to secure the foundations, and that's going to involve buying property for myself and my family so that we have no living overheads for the rest of our lives. And that would involve having a property portfolio that we live in for starters, and that would cover that. I would buy lots of Bitcoin, probably about 100, which I think in current pricing would be about $5 million worth, or about $60 million, sorry, $6 million worth. So yeah, that would, so about $5 million on that, a chunk on property that we would live in, both like separate houses for myself, my brother, and then one for mum and dad. With those big bases covered, I would take my family on a holiday of their choice. We can have a vote, we can make it a bit of a democracy, but I think it's worth noting that my vote would be worth too. But beyond that, I'm not really sure. It's such a hypothetical scenario that, and I don't really tend to deal in these unless I get asked questions like it on a Q&A. But if you're looking to know like what I would do activity-wise, I would still be podcasting. I'd still be recording weekly, although maybe I would be using some of that money to really fuel the pod, and I'd be flying everywhere to meet guests rather than just hosting them when they're in Glasgow, or when I'm in their city, I would maybe be doing it more often. Number 9, what are the next steps / ambitions for your career? The target is to grow the revenue again in my division, and my own personal target will go up from the $1 million that was targeted last year. Profitability last year was good. It was over 50%, which for the sort of figures that we're talking about, over £1 million, 50% profit is pretty tidy. And I think it's important to note that while revenue is going to go up again next year, we want to maintain or improve profitability. And there's a lot of cost pressures coming in, notably to talk about my sector in particular. Fuel's gone up again. Warehousing costs have gone up. even operational staff costs. There's been some increases in living wage and minimum wage. And these things all mean that you need to stay on top of the profitability and the margin that you're doing your deals on. So that's just some of the considerations I've got from a sales perspective. It's pretty clear that I have no desire to manage people. So I very much maintained my role and position as the sales director for my division. And the focus is on me driving forward with new client acquisition and also growing the existing accounts that we've got and that I've signed over the last 3 years. And this is what I'm good at. This is what Sahil Bloom talked about on the podcast as my zone of genius. It's what I really feel I can contribute the most in, but it's also what I enjoy. And if I really, really think clearly, and this is maybe something that's become clearer over the last, let's say, 8-9 months, I don't want to climb the corporate ladder and be the sales leader or the manager of a team or the CEO or the COO of a company. That's been clear for a while. What's even clearer is that I want more independent revenue streams. There's been a lot of listeners asking for sales coaching, tutorials, guidance, and I'm building some of that training now. I've actually delivered to businesses on a sales consultancy basis. So if you're somebody that wants support on an individual basis, then please make sure you DM me on either LinkedIn or Instagram, and I will notify you when that comes out. But in terms of the next steps of my ambition, my career, we're going to grow again. I've got all the pipeline in place and the energy and the activities and the processes to do that while being profitable. But there's no route for me towards being the CEO of a business or like working my way up the greasy pole of the corporate world. It's not something that interests me. Number 10, who would you love to have on the podcast who has passed away and why? I've definitely answered variations of this question before. I think one of them is always like, who would you have at a dinner party? And I guess a podcast is like a recorded dinner party, although I'm not going to be one of those absolute gimps that eats hot wings on a podcast trying to impersonate American podcasts. But my immediate answer when it comes to who would I speak to that's passed away is my grandpa, Willie Thornton. Rangers Football Club legend, war hero, and an all-round inspiration for me and my family. He passed away the year before I was born at the age of just 71, so I never got to meet him. So to get to speak to him, one, would be amazing, and two, to record that for my mum to hear, for my brother to hear, and then the generations to come after me to hear, that would be pretty special. And I was fortunate enough to hear a journalist who I think he maybe had the last interview of my grandpa in 1990. He did a podcast on the Rangers Heart and Hand podcast network, and I got to listen to that, and that was like really, really special. That was around March 2023. I got to hear that, and that was a journalist called David Legg had met my grandpa not long before he passed away. So that was really, really cool. So I would do my version of that, and I would do a really good job of interviewing him. Number 11. Three things that someone must consider before starting a business. Number one, does your product or your service solve a problem which a group of people or companies have and understand that it's costing them from a fiscal perspective? So is it that you supply furniture into their accommodation between the busy summer period that's durable and stylish and costs an amount that they're happy with? Do you have a way that will save them time, money? What is it that you solve, and what is it that your service or your product does? Number two, what sort of cost will these people pay to solve that problem? And how profitable is the revenue bring in once you pay your own costs? So what are your overheads? What's the cost that a client typically bears in the sector? And what's the difference? And what might the profit look like by the time you've paid for everything, including tax, of course? Number three, the next step has got to be to build a waiting list before you invest too much capital in things like samples or product trials or service demos. The man that taught me this is Daniel Priestley in episode 224 of the podcast, and he's really one of the leading authorities when it comes to building a startup and understanding whether it's viable for you to go all in on a business. And he is a huge proponent of the Score app, of which he was a founder, and the ability to build a wait list to assess the demand for your product, because it's all well and good you having this amazing idea and excited about it, but if it doesn't have any demand from the market, then really you're just building a very expensive, glamorous thing that's not going to generate any revenue or customers in the future. Right, number 12, this is again a bit of a spiritual one. If you could go back to 16-year-old Cole with the knowledge you have now, what key things would you do differently and what things wouldn't you change? if we look at some of the big decisions you make when you're 16, number one, I would still go to university. I studied politics at the University of Glasgow. But in terms of that degree, I would have used some of the time that I had away from the degree, which was a lot, by the way. The number of teaching hours was so low. And I would have started creating content, both written and video, during that huge amount of time that I had in my calendar. And I also would have done it as a joint honours, not just politics by itself, but I would have had like an economic or a financial joint honours degree. And I know that degrees, they don't ready you for the business world. They don't really teach you what's practical, but they do, if you do a finance or economics degree, they do get you used to dealing with numbers more than a purely linguistic degree that I did. I'd actually already started lifting by the age of 16, so that would stay the same. That wouldn't change. And I'm trying to think, if I knew at an earlier age, at 16, I would have wanted to know about macros and calories and progressive overload and training volume, because that would have made my progress a hell of a lot faster. And I also would have started a combat sport faster as well. I would have done boxing once a week from a very young age, and I think it would have been nice to have mastery of that. And who knows how good I would be at that now, or how accomplished I would be at that now. What else? I've said that I would do content sooner, but not too much sooner. I started posting on Instagram in 2017. I was still at uni until 2014. So let's say I started doing Instagram in 2014. I started the podcast in 2020. If I'd started that in 2017, that might have been a bit better. So 3 years earlier, that would have been good. Although I probably wasn't ready to articulate and communicate as well in 2017 as I was in 2020. So there's swings and roundabouts, but whatever the medium was, I would have started content earlier because the reps would have counted. Career-wise, I would absolutely still be in sales, as it's been a great vehicle for me. However, I would move industry far sooner. Insurance was laughably slow at times. And in Scotland, it's so small time, which really limited, one, my earning power, but two, my fulfillment from what I was doing. Because if I saw myself in the corporate world forever, and I've just mentioned my career aspirations, then I would probably have considered dabbling in software at some point during my early years, because arguably, it's even bigger contract values than what I do in furniture. So again, it would be an opportunity to bring in larger revenues for the company, meaning that you as an individual are more valuable and you're remunerated accordingly. I really do believe you can be playing the same sport, so the sport of sales for argument's sake, but you're playing in the wrong league. So you're going to get paid more playing in the English Premier League than you are playing in the Scottish Premier League, or you're going to get paid more than in the Bundesliga than you are playing in, I don't know, the Polish league. There's a lot to consider from that perspective. Something you maybe wouldn't consider that I would have done differently, but I would have started getting golf lessons again sooner. I actually had quite a lot of lessons as a kid, mostly group coaching through the team that I played for at my golf club, Hilton Park. And I was reasonably good as a junior golfer. I got to handicap of 8-9 and was pretty consistent. But during uni, my golf was really pretty poor and I developed some terrible habits, which I never really addressed properly. I just kept showing up and doing the same thing over and over again. Until I got a block of coaching, I think it was only 5 lessons in late 2020, early 2021. And my game since then has been so much better. It's far from perfect. I'm still an 8-9 handicap, but I'm a consistent 8-9 handicap. And I actually have the capabilities, when I keep it straight for the whole round and I putt well, to go well below that, which is pretty exciting. So there is a lesson there in terms of getting coaching earlier. And I'm sure if I had more time to reflect on this question, I really took it seriously, there'd be other areas that I would have got coaching in sooner as well. On a personal level, because I think that's important when you think about yourself as a 16-year-old, I was pretty unsure and and I think there's an element of course, at that age, you're unsure of yourself and you're uncertain. But if I had known sooner to embrace my full self more strongly, who I am, what I stand for, and what I'm actually interested in, I would have been so much happier. I would have laughed far more about the people who poked fun or tried to get me to conform with their narrative or how their expectations were of how young guys in Glasgow should behave or how they should talk or what they should be interested in. Because a lot of those people, they're the ones now that they're wondering what on earth happened to their life. They're looking around at 31 and they're fat, unfulfilled, in a terrible relationship or whatever the hell they're up to. Whereas I'm living this life of real alignment, real fulfillment that I could have been living earlier on, because the delta between my mindset and my circumstances and the people that tried to make me live a particular way or poked fun at me not wanting to partake in the quote-unquote normal activities, that delta would have been even greater, even sooner, if I'd embraced myself in full. And I think there's a lesson there for everyone. Really do if you feel like you're different and you like your superpower for yourself is your own uniqueness, don't try and conform to the tribe, because ultimately you won't be happy. And the happiest I've been over the last 4 or 5 years has been me just being me and pursuing that. Number 13, what would you do if money was no object? I guess this links a little bit to that £10 million gift question. But if I go a little bit deeper, I think I'd be doing all the same fitness and lifestyle habits that I've got. I'd still be walking in the mornings. I'd still be training at lunchtime or after work. And I'd still be lifting weights. I'd still be doing some boxing. I'd still be golfing. I'd still be going to watch Rangers. Work-wise, I'd not for a second be in my current role, because that's a stimulating place for me to work, but it's not. It's very much a means to an end. I'm not there because it doesn't pay me. It pays me money that enables my lifestyle. But I would 100% be podcasting, and I'd be feeding it. Like, if money was no object, I'd be feeding it with all the resources possible to do it in a way that I wanted to, that served my interests, that served my passions, and it met the goal of sharing really valuable content with the people that choose to listen. I think in terms of lifestyle, I would live between a hot, sunny country and Scotland when it's more palatable, or perhaps another area of Europe as well. Beyond that, I'm not going to be taking up any wild hobbies that I don't have. I'm not suddenly going to be somebody that goes jet skiing on the weekends or goes paragliding. Money isn't what's preventing me doing that. Like, me actually wanting to is doing that as well. But to give a more entertaining element to this answer and slightly less serious, I would definitely invest in Rangers, and I'd make sure they spent it well as well. So if money was no object, I think football clubs are a bit of a black hole for money. So yeah, I would probably pump some money into Rangers and make sure they were going to win the league. Number 14, if you had a dog, what are you calling it? Previously, my answer would have been Alfie after ex-Ranger striker Morelos. But now, probably depend on the type of dog. And I don't see myself getting a dog in the near or even distant future. I like the idea of a Scottish name, maybe something like Hamish, but I can't say I've given much thought to it. So we'll go with Alfie or Hamish. Okay, this one's going to be a slightly longer question. Number 15, what's your current supplement stack and why? For me, I actually went back and checked in the archive. I did answer this in episode 139 back in August 2022. And there's a lot of consistencies, but there's been a few additions. So hold tight, we'll work our way through it. And what I'll do is I'll tell you what it is, why I take it, the dosage, and where I get it from as well. And I've actually partnered with most of the brands that I'm going to mention. So if you are interested in getting your hands on these, I've got a discount code for most of them, but not all of them. So vitamin D3, that's a bit of an essential. I take 10,000 IU because we get limited sunshine in the UK, and there is so many upsides from getting into vitamin D. I actually interviewed Dr. Daniel Owens back on episode 40. It's a long time ago now, back in November 2020. So scroll back to that one and you'll learn a lot more about the immune system, about function, and why vitamin D is so vital, particularly for those of us that live in the UK. And mine come from NU Nutrition. I couldn't get a strong enough dose from my protein, so I went to NU Nutrition. Next up is vitamin C and a collagen blend. And this helps with growth and repair of body tissue, the formation of collagen, and the absorption of iron, which I primarily get through my diet, which is mostly through red meat. The collagen element, funnily enough, actually helps with skin. It reduces wrinkles and also reduces dryness as well. And dosage-wise, I've checked the MyProtein one when I started taking it about 4 or 5 months ago, and it matched up with what I needed at the time, but I will need to check what that dose is exactly. Next up on the supplement list, omega-3 and 6, which improves your heart health, it reduces inflammation, it supports brain health and cognitive function, which we're all about. The dosage for that is 100 meg, and within that there's about 180 meg of EPA and 120 meg of DHA. There's been some new data since I started taking these. I started taking these from NU Nutrition at the start of the pandemic, so 4 years ago. So I do need to review if that EPA or that DHA figure is high enough, but I do know that 1,000 megs is roughly what was correct at the time. Next up, turmeric and curcumin. Of that, I take 500 grams, and that tackles both joint pain and inflammation. When I've been at my leanest, my knees get really sore, and I've found that this helps. So I typically walk around pretty lean, but when I really push it to the extremes, my knees get quite sore from a lot of the walking and leg pressing or squatting. So yeah, that definitely helps, and it's NU Nutrition for those ones as well. Next up, and this is something I've been taking since I was 21, so that's over 10 years now, and it's finasteride, and that prevents hair loss by blocking DHT receptors within the scalp. I actually spoke about this at length with Darren Lee on the podcast somewhere around episode 125, so go back if you want to hear more about that. And the brand I use is Suns, and I take one meg per day, like one little capsule, but you can take a lesser dose if you're worried, because there's some pretty significant side effects with finasteride for a small number of people that use it. So please do your research before you dive into something like that. Next up is creatine, and that's 5 grams a day, every day, for forever. Strength, performance, muscle fullness, recovery, the whole shebang. Creatine is goated. And I've got a full episode with Dr. Darren Kando, which was episode 122 of the podcast. And I use my protein's creatine monohydrate either as a powder or a capsule if I'm traveling. Now, what's been added since I recorded in August 2022 has been two in particular. And the first of those is Lion's Mane, and that's from Vibe. And that's a nootropic that I take. Lion's Mane is a strand of mushroom, and that supports with focus, with memory, and it helps me with my deep work. The capsule I take is, let me get the data, it's 1500 meg per capsule, and I felt great taking it. Lion's Mane is something that builds up over time. So the first 10, 11 days is when you'll start to see the progress, upwards of 2-3 weeks, and you'll be absolutely flying. And I've been using it for over a year now. Now last, and certainly no means least, and probably the most exciting and interesting for any guys listening, is Tonka Ali. That is the herb that naturally boosts your testosterone levels. If you're interested in boosting your testosterone, you need to take the time to go and listen to the recent episode with Lucas Owen. If you're interested in anything about raising your natural test levels and why it's a positive thing to do, particularly in the modern age where natural levels are plummeting at a really alarming rate, then that's the one to listen to. Because in the last 3 months of taking it, I've noticed some significant improvements in my mood, my focus, and my energy, particularly first thing in the morning. Regarding brands for Tonka Ali, I've used two different brands, British Supplements and more recently, Momentous. But I'm trying one more brand to make sure that I'm getting the best quality Tonka Ali for the best price, because there's a lot of junk out there. Those two have all been good, and the third brand I'm pretty confident on, but I'm just looking to get the best possible price. I don't have a partnership with any of those brands, so I've not got a discount code for those, but I've got a discount code for everything else. So with any nutrition, it's Call5. And with my protein, it's the legendary MP call that I've had for 5 years now. Right, question 16, after a pretty heavy supplement conversation. Have you invested in mentorship for any particular areas of your life? Yes, I've been coached in sports and training from a very young age. I've had sales coaching in various forms, but mentorship in life, I've had work colleagues that were assigned as mentors formally, and I've learned so much from those people in the early days. Many of you will have heard me mention my legendary mentor, Lindsay, who was my first mentor in my first graduate job, and she really, really helped me. We actually met out for a coffee recently, and we were talking. Someone outside of that to support me with any particular one area. I have taken the time to be part of various different networks where people are at different stages of success within their journey, and I've taken knowledge and insights from the more senior members in that, whether that's been for content creation and podcasting, or whether that's been for investing in particular asset classes, or whether that's been for things like AI and even sales and business. But within that, because it's a network, you're not always the most junior. So you're also expected to share your insights and support new members. And many of you will have heard me say on the podcast, there's a clip that's been produced recently where I'm speaking about how to make sure you know something is to teach it onto others. And I really believe that that's been a big help for me as well. Something that I've thought about is that I've actually had quite a lot of free online mentors, especially in self-development and fitness. If we're talking about self-development, I've listened to hours of Modern Wisdom. I've listened to hours of Joe Rogan. I've listened to so much content in that space that's really leveled me up. And in the fitness space, my goodness, I used to consume so much fitness YouTube back in the day. I would say I know more than 90% of PTs that you're going to speak to in terms of like how to set up a diet, how to structure a diet. I've been like sickeningly lean coaching myself and going through it. So creators and authors who have consumed hours of their content and lessons, they've been mentors for me. And in this regard, this is something I've been thinking more and more about. When it comes to mentorship, you often pay with your time and or your money. So if you watch somebody for free on YouTube or consume their podcast for free, you're investing your time. When you pay money, you're also investing your time to consume the content that you've paid for, but you should, through the fiscal payment, shortcut some of that time, as the advice that you get because you paid for it should be more tailored for you rather than a creator speaking to their entire audience. So that's something I've been thinking more and more about. And I think as I develop more of my independent revenue streams away from just my corporate career, I'll be seeking more and more mentorship and advice on just how to structure that as well. Number 17, your video about time with family really made me think. Can you think of anything specific you've missed out on or not grasped because you were only half present, either daydreaming, scrolling, or multitasking at a time when a valuable opportunity came up? One question, but that video when I was speaking with Oliver Anwar in Dubai, and it was clipped up, and it was me saying that when I'm with mum and dad, I try and not have my phone on, I try and not look at it. I try and, like, if I'm watching the rugby at theirs or if I'm round for dinner, I'm trying to fully be there. And you mentioned daydreaming, didn't you? I don't really daydream. It's not really in my personality, but I absolutely scroll, and I'm 100% guilty of multitasking or switching tasking when I'm not dialed in as well. I think everyone listening to this will be nodding along, maybe regrettably, and can think of a time, even in their current day or even as recently as yesterday, where they missed out on something that somebody said or what was happening in their wider surroundings, because we're constantly getting pulled in by our phones or other distractions that are going to come up for us. You may even have checked your WhatsApp or Insta during this podcast or during a work task that you were doing today. When you're writing that email, you maybe just reach for your phone and just quickly check the group chat or quickly check your Insta notifications. We all do it, and it's just recognizing our cues for doing so. And typically, and this is what I learned from Nir Eyal, when he came in the podcast in his book, Indistractable, we're seeking to escape from discomfort. And I'm not saying that we're uncomfortable or that we're hurt, but discomfort can be boredom. It can be uncertainty about what to do next. It can be not feeling aligned overall, or it can also not being feeling stimulated enough. And because we get so much stimulation from our phones, we're constantly seeking it. And it's really natural. We're still not used to the technology we've got access to. The last part of the question was about a valuable opportunity miss. And I don't have one specific opportunity in mind, but I can bet every penny that I own that I've missed the chance to hear someone say something important to me, or for me to notice someone's facial expression or what they were hinting at, or for me to look up and meet someone new or interesting and be open to opportunities and connect meaningfully because I've been half engaged in my phone or half engaged in something else that was going on inside my head. And I think if we can stack the odds in our favor to encounter more valuable opportunities, we do so by being more alert and more engaged and more present. And in practice, that just means having more conscious use of our phone at times that we've agreed in advance that we're going to use our phone and we're going to dive into it and we're going to deal with our notifications and we're going to check it, rather than just pulling it out at random moments during other activities which aren't necessarily meant to be phone related. So that's certainly something that I've been working on for such a long time. I'm so far from perfect, but actually knowing that, okay, I'm not going to check my phone between 9 and 12, but at 12, I'm going to be on it for 15, 20 minutes. And that's when I'm dealing with all my notifications. That's when I'm dealing with all my messages. That's helped me a lot. Number 18, on the other side of this question, is there a time when being fully present let you pick up on a detail to take action and get a good outcome? I would say, because of the nature of the podcast, and for that I'm very fortunate, almost every podcast I benefit from the fact that I'm fully listening, I'm fully present, I'm completely immersed because there's no distractions. Nobody pulls out their phone in a podcast. It's just not the done thing. Nobody checks their emails during a podcast. One guest did early on. I'll maybe tell you about that one day, but that was a big red flag. And by being fully immersed, it lets me pick up on details and ask a deeper question or probe more. And the person that I'm speaking to really feels heard. So, think about this. When you're next out for dinner, have a rule where no one there is allowed to touch your phone. You will have so much better conversation because you're not getting these little micro interruptions. There's data from Cal Newport's book that says that it takes us 18 minutes to get back into the same state of flow after we've had a notification. 18 minutes. You're probably out for dinner for 90 minutes. If you check your phone every couple of minutes, you're never going to get into full flow in conversation and never get back to that same level of connection that you had. So for me, my rule at the table is, yeah, you can take a photo of the meal if you want to, but put your phone away and you can post later on when you're home if that's what you want to do. And for me, it just leads to far better conversation. You're going to pick up more details. You're going to learn more. You're going to be more thoughtful. You're going to be more responsive. And in terms of a good outcome, there can't be many outcomes that are better than feeling that you're connecting with someone, you're being seen, you're being heard, you're engaging with your friends, your partner, your family, or whoever it is you're spending time with. And I'm not just going to spend the rest of this podcast moaning and bashing phone use, because that's not the case. They're so important to us. But wow, if we can rein it in, control it more, and deal with it more on our terms, we're going to enjoy life so much more. Question number 19, you have such a wide variety of big names and guests now. How long do you have to push to book them in? It varies so much. There's no one answer to this. Some will book in after one message, one email. Some I might have approached 3 or 4 times without getting a reply over the years. Nowadays, getting introductions is really helpful, particularly to some of the bigger name guests. And that will typically come from somebody who's been on the show before, who either knows them or has some sort of connection with them. And that can be a really good avenue, because it proves that if somebody they know and like and trust has been on the show, then guess what? They might consider doing it as well. But you really got to do the groundwork yourself and cold outreach with a thoughtful twist and personalize it. My sales background's really, really helped here. And the guys that have gone through the podcast masterclass that have started their shows, of which 4 or 5 of them are on over 10 episodes now, which is amazing to see, because 10 episodes, 8 episodes is a big drop off for so many podcasts. Equipping people with the ability to outreach properly, whether that's for getting podcast guests on the biggest names you can, or whether that's just for getting meetings for your work or your startup or your business, oh my goodness, it's a game changer. And I would also say that the offering that I've got when I approach these bigger guests is now better than it's ever been, because it's a bigger audience size, it's better engagement, there's more reach, and even the quality of the content we produce, whether that's in a studio or whether that's the short form clips, that's something that they value too. So I've got better weapons in my arsenal now than I did previously. And that's helped me to get on bigger and better guests. And that will continue to be the case as long as I keep working and keep pushing. Number 20, with such a busy life and schedule, what do you do to unwind? You always seem like you're on. I always seem like I'm on. I think that's fair. I think that's my natural predisposition. I think many people that listen to this will feel like that sometimes, but there'll be lots of people listening to this who are so successful, much more successful than me, but maybe have more time to chill or relax. And it's funny that you use the word schedule in this, because I largely actually schedule time to unwind. If I don't, then my unwinding becomes this sort of sitting with the laptop in the living room, doing some sort of busybody, like low productive work. And that's not really switching off. Whereas if I schedule time to go to the spa with friends, go to the golf range, play golf, go to the football, meet a friend for a walk, meet a friend for a coffee, meet a friend for lunch, whatever the activity is, that's so much more rewarding than if I just assume that I'm going to stop working at 7 o'clock and relax, because it won't happen. I'll sort of relax, sort of not. Like, I actually joke with my brother, the number of times I sit down and watch a film is so, so low. It really helps if he puts a film on and I know, I'm like, oh, that looks a good film. I'll be like, right, fuck it. Put in the diary that I'm going to take some time to watch this with you. So scheduling time to unwind is vital. Unwinding for me, training is huge for that. I actually found boxing amazing, because you can't really be on your phone during an hour of boxing, because it's just so back to back and you're out of breath and you're tired and your phone's away. When I'm training in the gym, I'm on my phone in between sets. That's something that's a challenge. Although I'm really good at training with training partners and not being on my phone too much, that can be really helpful. Other things I do to unwind, I mentioned a book in golf, a book in the football. My phone goes away for that as well. I know I'm bashing on the phone just now, but it is important, because really I could pretty much always be doing something social media wise or something content wise or something even prospecting wise for my day job. I could always be messaging people on LinkedIn. There's so much that could be done that's not unwinding. Equally, and I want to say this with the greatest possible clarity, sometimes the work that I'm doing, even in my day job when it comes to sales, it doesn't feel like work. So while it seems like I'm on, sometimes these things give me energy. Like right before I started recording this podcast, I was on a sales call to a new customer. I was solving a problem, a headache that he'd had. I came off energized and happy and buzzing. So yes, I was on, but it wasn't tiring for me. It wasn't like oh my God, I can't believe I have to complete this spreadsheet. That'd be shit. I wouldn't fucking want to do that. But the other things that I'm focused on, yeah, a lot of the time I don't feel like I need a break, but I am getting clear at booking in those times to break. Okay, quick glass of water, and then we'll get on to the last few questions. And wow, this is such a it's such a big question. I think so many people are going to be considering this, so thank you to whoever asked this one. 21, how do you balance wanting to improve and develop while also leaving room to be human? Definitely one of the most common challenges and considerations for all aspirational people. Striking the balance between wanting more and maximizing what you're capable of while also being compassionate and understanding of yourself and the human condition and the reality that you're not always going to succeed and you're never going to achieve the perfect day, the perfect week, the perfect month, the perfect year is so hard, but we can always work on it and improve on it and try and move more towards acceptance, I think would be the key thing, not happiness. So the big thing for me is appreciating that you cannot control every single thing. Many of you know I'm a big proponent of elective sobriety. One of the reasons for that is I really like being in control of how I feel and how I behave and what I do. I've tried in many areas to take control of what I can and keep a clear structure to my day, to my week, and give my all within the structure that I've created, while also accepting a lot of what is going to happen is going to happen, and it's going to unfold in front of you based on the path that you're on. I'm not going to say it's the universe. I'm not going to say it's God, but a lot of what's going to happen is going to happen. It's really what you're optimizing for and controlling is the pace and precision that that is going to happen at. So for example, I've set a path that I'm on through the choices that I've made and I'm working towards it. It's taking a set amount of time for me to get there, and I'm trying my best to improve on that time and make it happen in a way that I hope and dream of and aspire towards. But I'm also going to try and enjoy that time that I'm spending and the journey along the way, and understanding that occasionally I'm going to get in my own way. Occasionally I'm going to slow myself down because that's just how life has happened. And it will make me pause. It will make me stop. It will make me potentially consider other alternatives and maybe take a slightly different route, not a massively different route, but a slightly different path. And I honestly remind myself every single day of my desire to progress, but also my happiness and enjoyment of my current circumstance and the situations I find myself in, and how much I actually enjoy the journey and the process that I'm doing. Of course, there's things that I do day to day that I don't love and I don't enjoy. I mentioned filling out spreadsheets. I hate doing that. I hate updating the podcast schedule to be like, okay, this guest is booked in for then and this guest is booked in for then. But what I do enjoy is when I book in the guest and I have them on and I prep for the conversation. I love that. But actions that help me to achieve my acceptance and enjoyment of the process are things like my gratitude journal. And it's actually really helpful for me to bring this up, because I really fell off journaling between my last Dubai trip, which was the end of March, until this week, basically. But it's back because essentially last thing at night before bed, I check in on things that went well that day, things that I enjoyed, things that I'm thankful for, as well as what I'm aiming for next and what I'm striving towards, and also things that I can improve on. And I'm not saying that you need to get a journal and write these things down, but try and take time to sit down and think about what you do too, and think about what of those things are the case for you. So what did you enjoy that day? What are you thankful for? What are you aiming for next? What could you improve on? You just need to make sure you pause. Writing it down is a great way to do that, but it's not the only solution. And the last one that I want to say, which I'm definitely getting better at, is celebrating successes with what I would call pattern interrupts and events that mark it. You might have seen that I've become more partial to cigar more often. I still don't really drink, but I use those cigar nights to sit down with my friends and mark occasions, as it really forces me to pause. I've made sure to mark some of the occasions that stand out. So the recent over £1 million in sales in a year, that was a cigar night. 200th episode, that was back in August. I went to the Dakota Lounge in Glasgow and had a cigar. I make sure to mark that, and it stands out. It makes me pause. It makes me sit down. Other ways you could mark it could be a meal out. It could be whatever you want to do that is slightly different from the norm. Sit down, mark the occasion, mark the win, mark the milestone, and then guess what? You're going to be back to work the next time. And I think what you have to notice as well is that you are listening to content like this every week. So you're going to feel this same battle where sometimes you feel like you're wanting to improve and develop, but you also have to leave room to live life and understand that you're a human being. And not everything you do has to be optimized. But if you want to achieve your huge goals, yes, you can enjoy life along the way and not let yourself be crushed by always working or hustling, because that would be a terrible, terrible situation. Question 22, how would you balance individual goals and aspirations within the dynamics of a committed relationship, ensuring both partners feel supported and fulfilled? Something I've come to learn is those that are self-confident and assured and clear on their goals and where they're heading, and they fully accept themselves, are much easier to be around and also to be with. As in, by me being self-assured in who I am, I make it a lot easier for others to be around me, both romantically but also as friends, and they're able to express themselves and be comfortable to work on what they care about around me and tell me what those are. They're able to grow and work on themselves and improve, including making mistakes and recovering from those challenges around me, because I won't shame them for it. I'll help them. I'll try and support them. I'll be there for them. I'll understand. So by being explicitly clear with each other, so in a relationship, even in a friendship, you want to be explicitly clear on what you care about and what matters, and then you're going to hold each other to that, even if that means having a difficult conversation if your partner falls below those standards. If somebody around me is committed to a standard, I'd much rather they continue to meet it. And if they didn't meet it, they accept the fact that we have a hard conversation about it. And the same goes the other way. If a girl that I'm dating, if she's direct with me and honest, I'd much rather that than having a yes woman just nodding along. Even in the days when I've let myself down, I don't want that. I want somebody to be like, oh, Colin, you said you were going to do that and you haven't done it. What's going on there? That's disappointing. I would want to hear that. Because I think comfort can be a killer. If you think about some relationships, you have to be really strong to resist the comfort, because there's going to be times where it's going to be great to lay in bed a little longer. Your girlfriend might love that. But if you're building something and you need to fit your training in or log onto the laptop, then you can't really embrace comfort too often. Give her the attention that she needs and the time that you can assign to it, but don't go beyond that and become soft or sloppy. And I also don't think the right girl would want you to do that on a regular basis. They might say they want you to do that, but they'll also respect you for sticking to your guns. And my values are pretty traditional in that sense, because I was raised in an environment where my dad was the breadwinner and mum raised my brother and I. It was the typical nuclear family, which has stood the test of time. There's a reason that traditions and cliches are where they are, because they've stood the test of time and then continue to be correct over the course in terms of the results. But equally, I think my mum had a lot of time and space to work on the things and the projects that she wanted to. She was very active in the community, within the sports clubs and the committees and the school boards. And in that sense, mum was able to feel fulfilled. Her number one goal was raise my brother and I really well, which, touch wood, I think she did very well. But she also was able to have these passions on the side that she was able to go and explore while raising my brother and I, because my dad enabled it and made that so. Equally, if I look at my future situation, it's likely to be a variation of that, where I would want to be, as the man, capable and able to lead my family and support everyone within it, and enabling my wife to work on what she's most passionate about. Of course, that would be supporting and raising the family, but it could be a return to a career that she's worked in before on a basis that works for her. Or it could be working on a business or a project, or it could be volunteering in a sector of passion. Ultimately, I think when it comes to balancing individual goals and aspirations within the dynamics of a committed relationship, communication's key, but also shared values and perspectives will serve you so, so well. And having people around you that really follow up on what they said they were going to do, and having that trust in each other to behave in the way that you expect them to. And that's sort of linked to what's come next. And this is a deep question. This is an interesting question. 23, what's your take on having strippers at bachelor/stag parties, given the notion of last night as a single man? Do you think this could be disrespectful to someone's partner? And how do you address boundaries and respect within relationships regarding activities like that? I mean, for clarity, I've been to a strip club once. I was 19. And I can't say I've got a massive inkling to go back. It doesn't really do an awful lot for me. Basically getting yourself all excited and then going home to your going home to your apartment by yourself. It's not great. I know it's a huge part of the stag party tradition, but it doesn't interest me massively. And if it's not part of my life as a single man at this moment in time, then I'm probably unlikely to incorporate it into my life when I'm in a relationship or a stage further than that when I'm engaged. So in terms of it being disrespectful, it's probably dictated by the boundaries that have been set within the relationship from the start. And if you stretch those existing boundaries and behaviors change just because it's your stag, I think that might be a problem. And equally, what happens in the strip club will dictate whether boundaries are crossed. Like if your friends and you are all just sat there and you're watching people dance on a stage, okay, I don't know if that crosses any boundaries. If you're in the back room getting dances and whatever else comes with that, maybe you are crossing a boundary. And equally, the last stag that I went on was a golfing one. And that suited me down to the ground because I don't personally expect to be having dances with strippers when I'm about to get married in the next few weeks. It's just not really something that I do. But then again, I appreciate I don't conform to a lot of expectations in society and a lot of the kind of quote unquote traditional activities as well. But number 24, let's wrap up on this one. Will we get more solo content? I actually think we hear more from you in certain episodes now too with guests. Episodes with guests will remain about the guests. That is something that I've said as a host from day one, and I don't expect that to change, but I am actively trying to ensure that I bring forth more and more insights from me to probe further with the guest. I'm never going to turn it back to me and be like, oh, well, my perspective is this, and then try and take over the show. But I feel it's probably been over 3 years. I think in the first year, you're just finding your feet. In the last 3 years, I've definitely been able to look back to insights that I've maybe learned from other guests or things that have happened within my life that can enable me to go forward. And so, for example, I'll put an idea forward to Rory Sutherland that I learned from Rob Henderson or I learned from Will Storr and see how he links with it, how he jives with his ideas and his story. But for me to put forward my own ideas and my perceptions and experiences, that's definitely become more prominent in the last 12 months, and I've worked on that, and that's going to continue. In terms of more solos, I've mentioned that I've decided to record something very special for episode 250 next week, distilling down for the first time a huge range of lessons, insights and quotes from the variety of guests that I've been fortunate to speak to over the last 4 years, as well as some of my own realizations that have come to the fore since recording since April 2020. I'll also be recording in the next run of 10 episodes a solo special from a sales perspective, and that'll be sales lessons from signing and booking and winning over 1.1 million of sales in 12 months at over a 50% profit margin. And I think a lot of you will be interested in how that can support your efforts and your mission, whether that's from a sales perspective or whether that's from a communication perspective. So yes, there are more solos coming, but there's lots of brilliant guests coming too. We've got Adam Ash, Joseph Valenti. I've just recently recorded with Valerie Fridland, who's an amazing author from the US. And at the time of recording, I'm flying to Dubai in 2 days, so you might be listening to this and I'll be in the sky and I'll be landing and there'll be some tremendous episodes on the way when I'm out there as well, which I'm really, really excited to share with you. But that's quite enough from me. Thank you so much for your support. If you're new here, hit the subscribe, hit the follow button, take the time to copy and paste the link from this episode or a previous one, share it with a friend, share it with a family member. We're not slowing down. Thank you so much for your support. Speak to you very, very soon.